Rick Gehring joins me this week to discuss starting a craft brewery on a shoestring. This is Beersmith Podcast number 282.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit Beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 282, and it's early June 2023. Rick Gehring joins me this week to discuss starting a craft brewery on a shoestring. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And Beersmith Web, the online version of Beersmith Brewing Software. Beersmith for the Web lets you design great beer recipes from any browser, including your tablet or phone. Edit recipes on the go with access to tens of thousands of recipes, as well as a full suite of recipe-building tools. Try Beersmith Web today by creating a free account at beersmithrecipes.com. And finally, a reminder to smash the like and subscribe button on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, or whatever platform you're listening on. It really helps us to add new listeners. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Rick Gehring. Rick is head brewer at Walnut River Brewing, west of Wichita, Kansas. And today, Rick's going to share the unusual path he took to building his brewery. Rick, it's great to have you on the show. First-time guest. How are you doing?
Doing well. I appreciate you having me on.
How are things out there in near Wichita, I guess? You're 30 miles west, I think you said?
We're actually east of Wichita, but east, yeah, okay, just about 30 miles. Yeah, oh, not a problem. We are actually pretty busy. We are the second largest craft brewery in Kansas. Well, I guess we switch back and forth to second and third. We have one of our rivals we banter back and forth with. But yeah, we are definitely busy this time of year.
That's fantastic. And I think you mentioned you started it professionally about 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, sure did. We opened our doors in July of 2013.
That's awesome. And, can you tell us a little about your background and how you got started brewing beer? I assume you probably did some work at the homebrew level at some point.
Oh, absolutely. I actually started back in the early 90s as a homebrewer. I was in the IT field, kind of bored with my career, and it was just kind of a fun hobby to get into. Of course, I mean, beer is great anyway, but I started there. Did a couple of homebrew kits, moved on to all grain brewing pretty quickly. Really about probably 25 years worth of homebrewing under my belt. And along the way, my wife was like, you know, you seem to love this so much. You really don't like your IT stuff anymore. So why don't you look into opening a brewery?
Yeah, I was going to ask, when and how did you decide to do that? I mean, I assume you were doing some other work. You said IT?
Yes, yeah. I was a corporate IT, say, for just about 20 years. And yeah, there's only so many times you can fix a network or reset a password before you get really bored.
Well, you took some risk when you switched over, from what I understand, right? You decided to go all in when you quit your job.
Yeah, sure did. With my wife's encouragement, of course, you know, she's the first person to keep happy. We decided to take the plunge, looked high and low for a good place to do it. Of course, I'm originally from Wichita. So we looked there first, but the issue was that the prices of buildings and land were really high. The water quality in Wichita is really not that great for brewing. You have to do a lot of fancy stuff to it. So we were looking in areas that were close to El Dorado and found that the water quality up here was tremendous, and the price of real estate was almost nothing, really, and the city was hungry for a new business. So we bought an old building that the roof was about ready to collapse on. And to do that, we ended up selling our house so we could divert our mortgage payment we used on the house into fixing the building.
Wow. That's amazing. And from what I understand, you actually lived in the building too, right?
Yeah, we sure did. There was a small apartment on the first floor of the building, and we decided to expand it a little bit and move in. So we lived in that, I think we ended up with about an 800 square foot apartment.
Wow.
And yeah, it was myself, my wife, and our two toddlers that we had at the time.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Sounds challenging. And then it took you a couple of years, I think, right, to get the building fixed up to the point where you could actually start a brewery.
Yeah, I want to say it took me right about 5 years worth of, say, diverting my mortgage payment into it to get it all fixed up. At about the 2.5 year mark, my wife had enough of the small apartment, so we had to buy a house under her request.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
But you were running a shop out of the building too. I think she was, right?
Yeah. So we have our building is about 6,000 square feet or so. But with all that empty space, once we get everything fixed up, my wife's kind of like, we could use that space, and my mom and I could make a flea market. They just had a good time doing that on the weekends. It helped bring in a little bit extra money. And yeah, so they eventually took over pretty much all the building. We had an old alleyway between us and the next building over that was turned into the brewery at the end. Hmm.
And this all happened about 10 years ago, and you were, let's say at some point you started actually getting serious about buying the equipment and putting the brewery up. And from what I understand, you did it with a very small pile of cash, right?
Yeah, very small. Say all my money really went into the building. So whenever I finally found a couple of business partners to work with, we pulled what cash we had, which turned out to be about $50,000. Wow. And we, the only thing we bought new with that was the brew system itself. And that was a two barrel system. That was about 35,000, I think, of that 50. So we had $15,000 to build the rest of the brewery with.
That's amazing. And so you started with a two barrel brew system. How much other equipment, how many fermenters and so on did you start with?
We started with two of the two barrel fermenters it came with. We took the plunge with that. And actually, I think within the first month of being open, we started supplying a local bar with kegs, and soon discovered that the two barrel fermenters were not big enough. Hmm. So with just a couple weeks after that, we ended up buying actually our first bank loan that we did, bought a seven barrel fermenter so we could triple batch into that one.
Wow. And doing triple batches has got to be a challenge, right? In one day, it's a long brew day.
It is a long brew day. We got pretty good at it. Like I was able to do three batches in about 11 hours. But at that time I was still working full time, believe it or not, to try to cover the bills.
So you work full time the whole time you were renovating, I assume, too, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And then when did you finally quit your job?
Well, let's see. It would have been probably about 3 years into the brewery.
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of long weeks.
So what were you brewing on the weekend then?
Yep. I'd come in on Saturday and brew three batches. On Sundays, it was usually kegging and transferring. And throughout the week, it was just babysitting.
So initially, were you running primarily as a brew pub? Were you? Did you have basically a tap room or something?
Well, Kansas is a little weird on their alcohol laws.
Okay.
And as a microbrewery here in Kansas, we just got this law changed actually just this year. But at least where we're located at, you had to sell at least 30% of your revenue had to be in food if you wanted to be able to sell a pint of beer across the bar.
Okay.
But strangely, we could give the beer away. So we could sit there and hand out tasters, and then we could sell growlers of beer to go. That was how we did our first 2.5 years, essentially.
Interesting. So you didn't have a restaurant, I guess. You just had you literally gave the beer away at the tap room, and then sold growlers to go.
Yep, that was the way we worked for the
little while. That's an interesting business model.
Yeah, it wasn't what I had really expected or desired, but it was the way it worked for the beginning.
So that was you did that for 3 years, and then eventually, did you open up and create a restaurant, I guess, or what?
Oh, we did. We did a couple different things. So our demand grew enough where we decided to go ahead and take out an SBA loan, and we upgraded from a 2-barrel system to a 30-barrel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a huge jump. But at that time, we also added in a canning line. We bought, I think at the beginning, we started with 5 30-barrel fermenters, went statewide with our distribution. But at that time, we also opened up a tap room in the brewery. And then in 2018, we also opened up a restaurant in Wichita as well. That was a big adventure for sure.
Nice. So quite a bit of change in a short number of years. I do want to go back to the beginning, though, because I was kind of interested. So obviously, you spent most of your initial cash on brewing equipment and keeping the building from falling down. But what about the hundreds of other things needed to get it up and running? I mean, how did you get through all the, you know, usually most of the people I talk to say that they need 50 to 100% over their budget just to get up and running because of all the things that come up with, you know, code and fire and all these other regulations that put things in place.
Oh, you're not lying there. Yeah, it was a lot of negotiation. Luckily, at least with the city on the code side, they were very forgiving. They were very hungry for new businesses. They gave us a lot of tax breaks. We had some grants available to us as well. We were in their downtown revitalization area, so okay. They were. Yeah, so we got a little bit of grant money as well. But still, there are always cost overruns. You just don't expect things. We discovered the sewer line in the building was collapsed, so that had to be dug up by hand and stuff like that. But, you know, we were gluttons for punishment, so on a Sunday, we got a concrete cutter and did the work ourselves.
Amazing. And, you know, the other interesting thing about your story, I think, was that you told me you built a lot of equipment from scratch yourself, which is kind of interesting. Can you give us a few examples of that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, one of the callbacks to being a home brewer is you always want to be tinkering with stuff. At least I always really enjoyed that aspect, trying to eke out, you know, efficiencies where you can and try to, you know, different techniques and equipment. So in my heart was always just joy of building things. So we did the same thing at the brewery. It was very evident. So, for instance, the glycol chiller we used to cool down the fermenters was built out of a Coleman cooler and an air conditioning unit. And yeah, strangely enough, one of my friends, he's an engineer, and his hobby is designing cooling systems. It was a little weird, but it worked out in our favor. So he was able to design everything for the heat loads and put it, you know, and we built it, and it worked great. So
he designed this glycol chiller off of an air conditioner that kept, I guess, your first three fermenters going.
Yep, actually, we still have it. And it works great. By the time we retired it, it was running 2 7-barrel fermenters and the 3 2-barrels, and it was doing great.
No kidding, that's amazing. And yep. What? Give us some other examples. I know you took a lot of other shortcuts to cut costs.
Definitely. When we started putting our beer into kegs for bars, of course, we had to have a way of cleaning them. And one of my never-ending projects seems to be designing and building keg cleaners. So my very first one was just a manifold of pipes on the wall that did everything manually. And, you know, a single keg would take me 25 minutes to clean. But when you're at our level now, you know, we're doing several hundred kegs, you know, a week. And yeah. That just doesn't work. So we looked at commercial keg cleaners, and the ones that we really wanted, you know, started at around $15,000. And I was like, you know, we could do better. So I did a little bit of book work on it. Actually went to school to do AutoCAD so I could actually lay out piping on a design. I learned how to weld stainless to be able to build a frame for it.
Oh, wow.
Then my education is actually in computer engineering. I never really used it in my profession, but it came in handy here where I was able to design the control system, do the programming for it. But, in the end, I think we ended up spending maybe $7,000 in parts in about 6 months of my time. But we are now on version 4 of a keg cleaner, and it's working great.
So you got through this initial startup, and I assume you were profitable at least initially, right?
I mean, we still are for sure. We're not going to, retire anytime soon, but we're still having a great time doing everything.
Yeah. But, so then you went through a period you mentioned of, fairly rapid growth. You went and got a SBA loan and expanded pretty dramatically. What was that phase like? Because I've seen other breweries, kind of go through something similar. They go and raise a substantial amount of money and in some cases don't make it. So tell us a little bit about how you managed to do all that.
Sure. And I've seen the same thing. Even in Kansas, there's been a few breweries that try to take off more than they can chew to begin with. And we were very aware of that. So our growth was, while it was fast, I guess, in terms of where we started, we did take things pretty methodically. So we would expand in one area, for instance, our home market's Wichita. So we would find, the top 20 accounts out there and try to get into those. And then, once we're happy with that, we move out to another 20. And once we kind of got most of Wichita covered, then we went to the next big town. But, over a period of probably 2 years, we went from just a couple of bars to statewide.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you break into some of these big distribution chains that are honestly dominated by a few large brands?
Yeah, it can be tough. The way that we ended up doing it, we're lucky that at the time we really started to distribute, Kansas was really starting to explode with more smaller breweries. And our distributor network actually has a little side group called the Kansas Craft Alliance. It is kind of a collection of all the distributors that want to deal with craft beer. So we actually just had a single point of contact at the Craft Alliance, and they were able to do all the negotiations for us with all the other distributors.
So you were able to break in to those very difficult markets that way, I guess, huh?
Yeah, that was definitely a good way to get into it. There's still a lot of tough areas, especially in Kansas. I mean, you get into the rural areas, and craft beer is not the drink of choice.
Interesting. Was it hard to drove you to switch models? I mean, because obviously originally you were using more of a, kind of a tap room self-distribution model, which is obviously much more profitable. What made you decide that you wanted to go over to, commercial distribution where you have to can and obviously the profit margin is much, much lower?
Yeah, they are.
Was it mainly the laws there or?
Not necessarily. We were, I guess, expecting more of a customer following here in El Dorado. Our projections for what we would do in revenue through the tap room were probably half of, or twice of what we really saw. The town really itself isn't that big. I think we are at about 13,000 people in El Dorado.
Yeah.
And even though we're still fairly close to Wichita, I mean, it's a short drive, but people still aren't willing to drive for 20 minutes to get a beer and then drive back. So we decided that, the best way to make more money is to get more volume out there. Hmm. And the best way to do that is in cans and distribute. So
and that's what you did. Yeah. So yep. You did eventually open a restaurant. Did you open it in El Dorado or did you move it somewhere else?
It is actually in downtown Wichita. That is what we consider to be our home market. We probably sell 80% of our volume there. So that just made the most sense to do it.
That makes sense. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about beer and brewing. What did your original lineup of beers look like, and how did you decide to choose those beers?
Ooh, lots of market studies. We probably spent, before we actually opened our doors, I want to say we probably spent 2 years doing test batches, lots of tastings. We'd bring in the local homebrew clubs, really anyone in the area who was willing to come over and taste beer, give us feedback. In the end, we had decided, I think, on 5 flagship beers, mm-hmm. which included, of course, an Irish Stout, a wheat beer. Yeah, you have to have a wheat beer in Kansas. We just had, I think, a blonde. Our main beer we thought we were really going to take off with was a California Common. And we also had a couple of
steam beer, huh?
Yeah, good old steam beer. You just don't see it much around here.
No.
But yeah, so we started off with that, and you know, surprisingly, our steam beer just kind of sat there. Nobody really cared for it.
No.
I thought it was a good solid steam beer, but yeah, nobody wanted it. But they loved our Irish Red. That was just kind of in the initial lineup.
And I think that's still one of your more popular beers, right? If not your top selling beer.
Yeah, it became our top beer very quickly. It is still probably 60% of our sales. And yeah, if that is actually the top selling craft beer in Kansas,
at least locally. Awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty fantastic that you went from, humble beginnings 10 years ago to have one of the top selling craft beers.
Yeah, thanks.
So, how did things evolve over time? Did you bring in some of the new trends like the IPAs?
Oh, definitely. We're doing our best to follow the trends. It's a little tough for me personally. I'm very much a traditionalist when it comes to beer styles.
Okay.
But we have actually a lot of younger guys on our crew. One of our other business partners is a microbiologist, and he is really into all these eclectic brews. So all the Northeast IPAs, you know, fruited sours, all that kind of fun stuff. And so I kind of hand the wheel off to him when it comes to doing all the new interesting styles. Mm-hmm. But if you want traditional stuff, you know, that's still in my wheelhouse.
So what is your lineup look like today, and how's it different from maybe what you had 10 years ago?
We do have quite a few sours now on tap. Our latest one is actually a plum sour, which is quite popular in our area. We have currently like 4 IPAs on tap. That also includes a Belgian triple we have. We have a Russian Imperial Stout. We have one called Ridiculous, which is kind of its own thing. It's probably closest to like an American Strong Ale. But
yeah, so you've got quite a broad selection now, right?
Yes, yes.
And are you selling all those through cans or primarily on tap?
We usually do, I think right now we have about 10 varieties in cans out in the market.
That's pretty broad. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, you credit your local water as a key to your success. What does it look like, and how important is it adjusting your water to get great beer?
Well, of course, good water is essential for making great beer. When we were looking at Wichita water, pretty much every brewery in that area had to do a lot of fancy footwork to make it work for brewing. Usually reverse osmosis, adding back in all the minerals and salts you need. And in El Dorado, the water source is completely different. It flows down through what we call the Flint Hills, which essentially is large open pasture lands that are primarily limestone. And it picks up all kinds of nice little minerals and calcium along the way. And by the time it reaches us, it is actually exceptionally soft water with low sulfites and everything in it. all we have to do to it for almost all of our beer styles is we run it through a charcoal filter to remove the chlorine. And it's rare that we even have to touch it.
Interesting. So you don't do a lot of water adjustment off the base water then?
Not for most of our styles. If we're doing things like hazy IPAs, then yeah, we do have to go in there and tweak all the sulfite levels.
Right, right. That makes sense. So how's that different than you said the Wichita water is bad? Does it have too much of what? I don't know. Sulfite? What?
the biggest issue with that is the reservoir for Wichita is surrounded by agricultural land. So all the fertilizers and everything are run off into the lake, and the lake is nice and shallow as well, so it gets plenty of daylight. And what happens is, as soon as the weather starts warming up, you get algae blooms, and the water just absolutely tastes horrible.
Interesting.
So
not good.
No.
So I mean, you've gone from humble beginnings now to the top selling Kansas craft beer. Can you tell us a little bit about your top-selling beer?
Absolutely. It is an Irish Red. It's a little non-traditional. We've tried to enter it into a bunch of contests, but it's slightly out of style, so it doesn't fare well for strict judging. But it sells incredibly well, which is, of course, we want to make our customers happy. But it is a fairly rich version of an Irish Red. Nice, of course, malty, very low bitterness. If you put it together with, say, you know, your more traditional Irish red, say a Killian, just what most people think of, probably. Killian seems to be pretty thin and watery and overcarbonated compared to ours. But but ours is nice and rich and malty, low bitterness. It's very easy to drink. You can sit there and drink multiples of it. I mean, it's only 5.5%. And yeah, people love it.
That's awesome. That's great. What's your second top selling beer?
At the moment, it is a Kolsch. It kind of depends on the season as to what our second one is. In more the winter time, our IPA, we have one called a High Beam IPA. It's kind of a traditional West Coast. That one becomes number two. Now the weather's warming up. It's now going to be our Teeter Rock Kolsch.
A Kolsch is a difficult style to brew and make it perfect. What are some of the secrets to making that work?
For us, it's making sure that, of course, you have nice, clean yeast in it. Really control your fermentation temperatures. Do all the standard things you need to keep your yeast happy, which, of course, for us is plenty of oxygen whenever you're transferring the wort from the kettle to the fermenter. Yeast nutrient for sure. And just really monitoring your yeast performance over generations. Luckily with our microbiologist on staff, he can really kind of watch that. And we are able to usually get 10 to 12 generations out of a yeast pitch before we have to get a new one.
So you do reuse your yeast, obviously. A lot of commercial brewers do, obviously, but.
Yeah. Yeast is actually one of the highest cost items out there. So we do our best to reuse that as much as possible.
Interesting. And are you using a lot of other ingredients for example, when you make a Kolsch, are you using German malt how are you sourcing your ingredients?
Most of our malt actually comes from Canada, strangely enough. Import malts, of course, the price of everything went so high that we just have to make do with what we can get at a reasonable price. But the Canada-based Pilsner malts really seem to work just fine for it. Hmm. So,
Have you jumped on the lager train either? There's a lot of craft breweries now that are getting into making, you know, fine, high-grade continental lagers now.
Absolutely. We are playing around with the Mexican lager. That seems to be doing pretty well. We've done a few of the test batches on it and got really great feedback on it. But actually, we're taking a little bit different approach, I think, on our production side. We do have a little bit of extra capacity, so we are testing the waters on doing contract brewing. A lot of those customers are actually wanting to do lagers because they don't have the space for them or the time to tie a fermenter. Yeah. So we've done a couple of those lagers so far, and it's been actually a good experience.
So interesting. So you're actually contracting out your facility for other people to gypsy brew, I guess, then. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Interesting. So you must have some excess capacity there.
Yeah. At the moment, we probably have about 40% of our capacity still there. And we actually did that in the beginning as part of the brewery design. We wanted to make sure that if we did decide to go into new markets, whether it be a different state or whatever, we wanted to have that capacity there without needing to, you know, beef up our infrastructure and spend money we didn't have to.
So do you think the Kansas laws help drive you towards, you know, not doing just a tap room and drive you into distribution or not?
That's kind of a funny story. In the beginning, I wanted to do just a tap room with a restaurant along with it. So just a small brew pub in El Dorado, Kansas. That was my idea. My business partner didn't want to have anything to do with a restaurant. He's like, I don't know the food industry. The failure rate is so high on those. I don't want to touch it. So we had to negotiate, and it was, okay, we'll start with the production brewery, make that work first, and then maybe add on something more later. And I, you know, it took me a few years, but I got my way.
Interesting. So you did. So tell us a little bit about the restaurant and how that, that came out and how it's working for you.
Okay. Yeah. So the restaurant, of course, we got to a point with the production brewery where we were pretty much statewide. Our areas of growth, at least in Kansas, are not that great anymore. So we were looking better ways to expand our production. And it was right about the time where you saw a lot of the bigger breweries that were multi-state starting to either fail, collapse, and just, you know, have a big downturn. Anyway, our thought was, well, obviously trying to push out into another state may not be the best idea at this time. And our best market is local. And of course, those are the people who know us. And so let's look at a local restaurant. And of course, we already knew from our tap room, the El Dorado, you know, while a great place to be as a brewery, may not be the best place for a restaurant. So we went to our hometown, Wichita, and right in the middle of downtown, where there are several of the breweries right in the same area. And so we've actually, got a place in an old train station that we're leasing and created a restaurant right there. It's, you know, actually really good food. We got some great staff there, hired a good chef. Yeah, we have, you know, really great food, really great beers there. For quite a while, we actually brewed on site, and It was a small enough space there that it was more of a hassle because I didn't have enough space to really work. And what I would end up doing was throwing a hose out in the middle of the hallway and then the staff would trip over it. But,
So you ended up, closing the production there, I guess. And you also had the water problem you mentioned too.
Yeah. We actually had to put it in a small RO system there to be able to get water to brew. And it took probably 3 or 4 hours to fill our 2-barrel tank to brew on site. So it was just more of a pain than anything else. And turns out we could actually contract brew to ourselves. So we just moved our 2-barrel system, which was still our original one, back to our main brewery and did our batches here and just contract brew to ourselves. It was great.
That's good. And the restaurant overall has been a success, I guess.
Yeah, actually we've been doing really well. We had great reviews so far. So now we've been open almost 5 years. So, yeah, wow. It's hard to believe that, but yeah, 5 years.
So how did COVID affect you? Obviously, everybody was hit pretty hard during COVID. Obviously, you were a production brewery at that point, so you probably weren't hit quite as badly. But what were some of the adjustments you had to make?
Yeah, COVID was pretty horrible for the restaurant. The main brewery wasn't too bad. We just learned that we just needed to shift from kegging beer for restaurants and bars into more cans. I mean, everybody was still drinking. They just did it at home. So from the production side, it wasn't too big of a deal. The restaurant was a whole different experience. Yeah. Nobody came in. Essentially our income almost went to zero. We did all of the emergency relief funds and everything that we could to just keep the bills paid. Took out a few loans on that one. And, you know, I mean, it worked out, but for about 6 months, we were down to a crew of two people, and we just did to-go orders. And, wow. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty horrible.
Yeah.
But of course, whenever you, like, whenever we came back out of it, you know, started opening up the restaurants again, then we still have issues trying to hire staff. That's, you know, ongoing problem for everybody, I think.
Yeah. Are you still having some staffing issues? I know a lot of people I talk to are having trouble getting people in.
It's definitely a challenge. If somebody leaves, it's tough to find somebody that really still wants to work and does a good job, but it's getting a lot better.
Well, you started on a shoestring, and so I wondered if you had any advice for somebody looking to go professional, perhaps, from a business perspective.
Absolutely. Really, I think it's a matter of passion and a willingness to do a lot of sacrificing. I mean, if it's really important to you to do brewing as a business, I have learned that you're not going to get rich doing it. It is something that it's a subject of love. And if you love great beer and you want to share that passion with other people, you know, get into it. Just be prepared that it's going to be a lot of long nights, long days, long weeks, long years, probably. And you're going to have to figure out how to fix things with no money and just keep plugging away at it.
And I assume the challenges, from people I've talked to, the challenges continue, because even if you, raise a big chunk of money somewhere, you still kind of have to work through all the challenges with the people that loan you the money in the first place, right?
Absolutely. We do have a group of investors in our brewery now. So as we moved along, we actually did bring in a few people that really helped us out. It let us purchase a new canning line and try to deal with a lot of the challenges. I know a lot of the production guys out there will know about all the aluminum can shortage and issues that are going on with those. And that's still a big problem.
Supply chain, it still has some kinks in it, I think.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Yeah. Well, can you take it from a brewer's perspective, perhaps, and what are some of the keys to success purely from a brewing perspective? Because obviously the beer has to be good.
Absolutely. For us, I want to say our big thing is consistency. That's what I hear really time after time about our beer, is that no matter when you pick up one of them, our batches are consistent. Of course, the quality has to be there for sure, but that kind of goes with, I think, good practices. For us, it is about, you know, making sure your yeast is happy and healthy, making sure, of course, everything is clean, just like you'd expect. Temperature control during fermentation is absolutely huge. Making sure all your ingredients are quality. Of course, it's always a fine line there between price and quality, so you have to really watch it. But
lots of challenges. So you're big in Kansas, obviously. Have you looked at expanding in other states, or are you primarily focused on distribution in Kansas?
We have looked at a couple other states. We were in Wyoming, of all places, for a little while. But our distributor decided to go out of business there, and they handed us off to a different distributor who wasn't all that great. So from what we can tell, really moving into other states, the big challenges we have there are finding a good distributor to partner with. And unfortunately, you just don't know until you start working with them. Currently we are, say, throughout Kansas, and we are also in Missouri as well.
Great. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, can you tell folks where your brewery is located and where your website is so they can find you?
Absolutely. We are in El Dorado, Kansas. Actually right in the middle of downtown. If you ever want to come by the tap room, get a tour or whatever, you're more than welcome to. Our website is at walnutriverbrewing.com. And if you ever want to find out where our beer is at, there is a app on there called Beer Finder. can click on it and throw in your location, and it'll tell you what liquor stores, restaurants, bars, whatever, where we're at.
That's awesome. And I wanted to get your closing thoughts after demonstrating that you don't need you know, millions of dollars to start a great brewery.
Yeah. So if you want to get into this, you just got to be patient. Try not to reach too far too fast. I say I've seen at least two breweries in our area fail just because they tried to grow too quickly. It's just a matter of being patient and diligent.
Interesting. Well, Rick, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
And my guest today was Rick Gehring, head brewer and founder of Walnut River Brewing Company in El Dorado, Kansas. Thank you again, Rick.
Yeah, thank you.
A big thank you to Rick Gehring for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also Beersmith Web, the online version of Beersmith Brewing Software. Beersmith for the Web lets you design great beer recipes from any browser, including your tablet or phone. Edit recipes on the go with access to tens of thousands of recipes, as well as the full suite of recipe building tools. Try Beersmith Web today by creating a free account at beersmithrecipes.com. And finally, a reminder to click that like or subscribe button on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, or whatever platform you're listening on, as it really helps us bring new listeners in. I'd like to thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.